Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Carol G.
Juan Gabriel.
Christina Aguilera.
What do these three have in common?
You mean apart from impeccable style, chart-topping canciones, and drama?
Facts, yes, all of the above are correct, but most importantly, they're some of the biggest Latin icons in the world. And they're just a few of the game-changing Latin stars we're covering in Becoming an Icon Season 2. Listen to Becoming an Icon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Fantasy Bros Football Podcast. I am your host, Dan Harris. With me, as always, are Mike Tagliere and Kyle Yates. You can find us on Twitter at DanHarris80, at Mike Tagliere NFL, and at Kyle Y NFL. Boys, how you doing today?
Good. I have something I need your guys' help with. Neither of you have this problem, but my family, we have like a receding hairline, and it keeps going, right? And I'm at the point where I'm ready to shave my head, like maybe not like bicket, but like, you know, like a one or a two. And my wife is telling me I can't do it because she likes the hair that I have. What do I do?
You gave me a ton of crap for shaving my head during quarantine.
Well,
so you
do you know why
not.
I gave it? I gave you a ton of crap because you have beautiful hair. I love your hair.
That's a weird thing to say. Why are we starting off the podcast with this energy?
That and thus ends the Fantasy Bros Football Podcast yep. for today. Thank you for coming in. Yeah. Tags, first of all, I feel like number one, your wife, and this is the way I always view it, which is why like I don't really work out or do anything like that. Like my wife and I made a vow, so she's got to look at me no matter what, so I can do what I want. If I want to shave my head, I'd shave my head. But at the same time, I just feel like, man, I don't know, common courtesy, the person who has to look at you more than anyone else, you probably should just do what she asks, right? I mean,
Probably, especially if, you know, well, I don't want to get into details, but I wear a hat like 90% of the time. So I don't think it should really matter that much. It would just save me money on haircuts is what it would do.
Yeah. Well, when I go bald, it's going to look terrible because my head is like gargantuan. Like legitimately, like we joke
just
about it.
Just get a cowboy hat, Woody.
I really will. I will just wear the cowboy hat nonsense.
There you go.
All right. Anyway, we could talk about Tag's hairline all day long, and we usually do offline. But since we're here, why don't we talk about what we're going to be doing today on the pod. We're going to be talking about Tag's boom, bust, and everything in between series. It's awesome. You should be reading every part of it, but we are going to talk about some takeaways that we had from it. Then we're going to end on a little game of Fantasy Odd Man Out. I believe it's the second time we're playing on this. I'm sure Tags is going to dominate because he's Tags and he wins everything, but it's going to be a lot of fun. But first, we are recording this on Thursday, August 13th. 1 week from today is Thursday, August 20th. We're doing something ginormous. It's a 10-hour live stream to prep you for your fantasy drafts with guests from all around the industry. This is a little thank you to everyone who listens to the podcast, but especially it's going to be on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/fantasypros, especially to everyone who subscribes to our YouTube channel. More than 48,000 of you, thank you so much. Anybody who may be listening to this now and who doesn't subscribe, you should know all of our podcasts, this one, it's on our YouTube channel. You can look at our glorious faces. You can't see Tags' hairline because he's probably wearing the hat, but you can go on. We're pumping out tons of videos. We're going to do tons of live streams. There's going to be even more as we get into the season. And people have reached out to us lately, asked how they can support us and the show. Easiest way to do that, leave a review for the podcast or subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's a click of a button, youtube.com/fantasypros. Click of a button takes 2 seconds. That's really why we continue to do this, because of our subscribers. That is why we record our podcast. That is why we do these short form videos. That's why we're doing tons and tons of live streams. And for this one in particular, again, Thursday, August 20th, 10 hours. It starts at noon Eastern. It's going to go through 10 p.m. It's going to be fantasy football nonstop. We're only going to take breaks for bathroom, maybe the occasional food, stuff like that. We're going to have guests galore. Some of the most accurate people, Jake Seeley, Sean Corner, Justin Boone, Jamie Eisenberg, a whole lot more throughout the 10 hours. We're going to be hitting on everything, everything. We're going to talk about our top targets. We're going to break down every position. We're going to basically do everything you've ever wanted to know about fantasy football. Again, it's going to be on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/fantasypros. It's just our way of saying thank you for being loyal subscribers. If you're not a subscriber, go ahead, click the subscribe button so you'll get notified again of everything that we're going to be doing on there, especially the live stream.
I'm excited. I mean, that's our chance, because a lot of people, sometimes we do the live streams during the day and some people are like, hey, I'm at work. I miss it. I can't be a part of it. But doing it 10 hours, you guys do not have any excuse.
Yes, either. Seriously. Pop in whenever you want. Like, pop in for 10 minutes. Pop in for 10 hours if you want. I mean, it's going to be, you know, we were joking internally, it's going to be a little bit like Yates. You probably don't know the show Saved by the Bell. But it was this like Save the Max type of like, you know, all day radio thing where at the end they're probably falling over. Yeah, we might be falling over. We might be a little tired by the end of it, but whatever. It's going to be amazing. Again, Thursday, August 20th, noon to 10 Eastern time, youtube.com/fantasypros. All right, let's get into it, boys. Boom, Bust, and Everything in Between Tags. You wrote this amazing series. I loved it. I learned a lot from it. Why don't you tell everybody what it is before we get into our biggest takeaways from it?
Yeah, so the idea is that, you know, we play a weekly game in fantasy football. We don't play over an entire season. I can't tell you how many times people come to me and say, Jarvis Landry was the number 13 wide receiver last year. Mike Evans was the number 12 wide receiver last year. He was a wide receiver one. Jarvis Landry was a borderline wide receiver one. It's not true. I mean, if you actually go through and look at the numbers over the course of the year, what I do is I break down the numbers and I find out what it took to finish as a top 12 wide receiver on average, top 24, top 36, and all that. And then I figure out how consistent were these players. Just a glimpse of that. Jarvis Landry finished as a wide receiver two or better just 31% of the time. Now tell me, is he the number 13 fantasy wide receiver? So if you think you're getting a discount by getting him as the 28th wide receiver off the board, you're wrong. So what this article does, it takes all opinions aside. It literally, it's based on pure data. And I have people coming at me after this article came out saying, oh, this is reason this. I'm like, hey, I didn't post any points of mine. All I did was say, this is what happened last year and explain yourself. And this is just pure uncut numbers. So there's a lot of interesting takeaways that we're going to have from this series. And I love the fact that we're doing a show on this, because, you know, we often share our opinions, but this one's actually going to break down and highlight just how consistent players were in 2019.
Yeah, I love the point tags. I mean, you think about, like, let's think about like tags, like an analyst one in like the top tier, but you look at like his like daily performance on the pods, there are so many clunkers. Like, there's just no sort of consistency, like right where you
bust,
need to be.
Bust 75% of the
time. Right, exactly. Your bust rate of 75% is just amazing. That's really what I think. But all right, tags. Look, I mean, you mentioned obviously Jarvis Landry. Why don't you tell me, you know, maybe we'll go around the table here a little bit. Tell me like one of your biggest takeaways when doing this and things you discovered, something that really stood out to you as a takeaway from writing this series.
Yeah. So one of the things I wanted to highlight from the get-go is understanding what it takes to be considered an RB1, to be considered an RB2, wide receiver one, and things like that, because it'll help you get a better sense about the percentages that we're talking about through this show. Running backs, for your running back one, like the top running back on your roster, you want him to perform as an RB1 50% of the time. If you get 50% of the time, you're doing really, really good. Your RB2, you want him to post RB2 or better numbers 60% of the time. Ideally, you know, he's going to get some of those those RB1 numbers to make up for when your top running back fails to produce those numbers. But it's a balance, right? And those are the numbers you should be shooting for. So if you get, you know, a high upside running back in your RB1 slot that you know is not going to reach those numbers all the time, you're going to need to find a little bit more consistent running back in your RB2 slot. So it's just understanding what you have to aim for in your lineup and basically know what you go for. Now, so the RB1s, there is a clear tier break after Derrick Henry. And I know not a lot of people wanted to draft Derrick Henry, myself included. I brought this up on the show the other day, is that Derrick Henry, I figured if you were in any sort of PPR format, you have to lower him down. Well, this study is based on PPR formats because it shows who is most consistent reliably, because point per reception leagues, there are some things that are, is it great when they catch a pass, you know, for 1 yard and they get 1.1 points? No, but it's more predictable year over year in PPR. So Derrick Henry, despite being in PPR, he performed as an RB1 60% of the time. That was second best in the league behind only Christian McCaffrey. And again, this is PPR. He performed as an RB2 or better 80% of the time. He only busted 6.7%. So one game was, that's all he busted. I consider the bust to be fewer than eight PPR points. So Derrick Henry gave you the floor. And then when you look at that next tier of running backs, like the Joe Mixons, the Nick Chubbs, Josh Jacobs, even Aaron Jones to a certain extent, those guys' RB2 numbers, they were down 56 to 67%. So those guys were in a completely different tier than Derrick Henry last year. And they went to the playoffs. You had teams that legitimately knew what was happening. They knew Derrick Henry was going to get the ball and they could not stop him. The reason I'm okay with Derrick Henry retaining this and saying that he's going to keep doing it is because the offensive line has been brutal the last 2 years. You know, less than a yard before contact for the running backs each of the last 2 years for the Titans. Derrick Henry is just a game changer, and this kind of highlights just how consistent he was, despite perception, my own included, that he was going to be an inconsistent running back, is, well, not as consistent as some of those other top-tier backs, but Derrick Henry absolutely belongs in that conversation.
Yeah, first, let me ask one question here, Tags. Where would you rank Henry in PPR then? Because I know that's what a lot of people, and you know, I was just doing a chat right before we got on. We do 2 chats a week, by the way, and we tweet them out and everything like that, where we answer all your questions. And a lot of people were asking about PPR formats and specifically and how far, you know, what moves Henry. Is Henry a top five back for you in full PPR then? Is he number six? Where does he fall now with this? Because you're making a good point. This is PPR formats and he's still getting it done.
I think he's safer than the other running backs. I don't think that Derrick Henry has number one running back upside. So therefore, if you want to go after someone like Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who might catch 60 balls, 80 balls, you can go after him. If you want to go after Mixon, who they're talking about involving in the more in the passing game. But again, you have question marks around those players because Mixon's never been using the passing game like he should to be a truly elite running back. I know they're talking about changing that. I know Josh Jacobs is talking about catching 60 balls, but Derrick Henry's the safe option. If you're looking for a safe way out, look, he's not going to be the RB1. I really don't think so. I mean, if he wasn't the RB1 last year in terms of what he did, how many touchdowns he scored, he's probably never going to get there. But again, to finish as a top six running back, as long as he's healthy, he's going to finish there. So I do have him at number six in PPR as well. But that doesn't mean, depending on who I'm drafting with or if it's like a best ball format where I need some, I'm searching for the potential RB1, I might take some of those guys over him. But if you're playing legitimately just saying, what is the most likely outcome, I think Derrick Henry probably should be the sixth running back off the board.
Yeah, I think it's fair. He's my sixth in PPR. It kind of felt weird to do that, you know, without looking. But you look at the numbers, though. Yeah, as you said, 60% of the time RB1, 80% of the time at least an RB2, 86.7% of the time at least an RB3. Boom, 26.7%. Bust, only 6.7%. You talked about that tier. You go down to the next guy, Joe Mixon, bust 18.8% of the time. Nick Chubb, 12.5%. Josh Jacobs, 15.4%. There's a clear teardrop after that. So I think it was really interesting in that, especially because you use PPR format for somebody like Henry. All right, Yates, unless you want to talk about Derrick Henry some more, why don't you go ahead and give me a takeaway from it?
No, I'm good. I'm good moving on. I'll bring up Allen Robinson. Allen Robinson here in the boom bust and everything in between article was actually really surprising to me looking at how just consistent he was. Now, he didn't offer you the boom upside that a lot of the other wide receivers in, you know, the top 10, or at least in the top 10 of ADP right now, gave you last season. Like, for comparison, a boom, which is more than 25 PPR points, Chris Godwin had 35.7%. 35.7% of his games were boom. In comparison, Allen Robinson, 12.5. However, his bust percentage was 12.5%. It was an extremely low rate. And when you're looking at someone like Kenny Golladay on that list at 25%, that 25% of his games he busted, the stability that Allen Robinson provided for your roster last season with Mitch Trubisky and Chase Daniel as the quarterbacks, right? That was just incredible for him to be this steady, reliable. You plug him in as your wide receiver one and you were good to go. You know, you didn't have to really think about it. And then you could get these boom plays from, you know, a Will Fuller when he was healthy or these other like DeSean Jackson week one, you know, like plugging in and supplementing your roster in other places. So for this season to look back at boom bust and everything in between and say, okay, if I want stability at my wide receiver one, Allen Robinson might be the guy that I go with if I'm at, you know, if I'm looking to load up on running back in the first 2 rounds and take Allen Robinson in the third. I was just really impressed with that number. It shocked me.
Yeah. Let me ask you something, Tags. Since you wrote this, in the process of writing it, how much did it change your rankings, generally speaking? Because again, yeah, we talk about this. It, you know, in baseball, we play a lot of rotisserie leagues. It's your stats that you put up from day one through your stats that you put up till the end. Doesn't matter if you're going to go through a 3-week cold stretch or anything like that. But it obviously matters big time in fantasy football because it's head to head. So in doing this, how can you think of any certain player, maybe Robinson or somebody like that, who moved significantly in your rankings, or did you not really let it factor?
Well, you guys both know, you guys both do projections, and the fact that we have these projections that spit out, not saying like what's the most likely scenario that we have, right? And what this does is it helps me formulate my tier list. And so I always draft off tiers. I don't draft off rankings. And I think that's a misconception out there. A lot of people want to ask me, who do I draft next? Who do I draft here? This guy's on the board. This. It depends. It really depends on who's in your roster and understanding those tiers and what they offer you. Because again, like everything in life, you need balance. You know, it's like a stock portfolio. You can't just sit there and have a bunch of penny stocks and expect you're going to make money in the long run. You're not. You need a good balance. You need, you know, blue chip stocks. You need bonds. There's so many different things that you need in that portfolio. It's like your fantasy lineup. You're going to need some players that are a little bit volatile because you want that upside that they present. But you're also going to need guys like Allen Robinson, who, by the way, he ranks sixth in the NFL among wide receivers in wide receiver two or better percentage. He ranked just behind Michael Thomas in wide receiver three or better performance. So that floor is fantastic with Allen Robinson, again, with that poor quarterback play. And even, so here's the thing. He was a wide receiver one just 31.3% of the time. People are going to see that and they're going to say, whoa, whoa, whoa. However, understand this. There were just three wide receivers last year who produced wide receiver one type numbers more than 33% of the time. Is that not crazy to you guys, just to show how much parity there is at the wide receiver position?
I was shocked by that. I'm not even kidding. Like, we'll talk about one of my takeaways in a minute. But that's the thing. You not a wide receiver, but you're like, oh, maybe you want Christian McCaffrey, who's like an RB1 93.8% of the time. Like, right? Like, that's sort of what you're thinking about. But no, I mean, you look at the wide receiver one, Michael Thomas, 62.5%. That's great. But even I feel like if you're not really digging into it, you're like, I mean, that's like less than 2/3 of the time he even finishes as a wide receiver one. Like, really need to think about it. And that is miles ahead of where everybody else is. Davante Adams, 41.7%. Then it just drops to basically everybody else. Like, the best you're going to see is a third. Chris Godwin at 35.7%. That really stood out to me. I don't know about you, Yates. That really kind of jumped out to me.
Yeah, it's shocking. I mean, you plug in these guys, and that's what makes ranking on a weekly basis very difficult, because you're going to have these guys who have these huge blow up performances. They score three touchdowns, you know, and you just didn't project it anywhere. And those move these top tier guys down right outside of the top 12. So, yeah, just naturally. But that was completely shocking to me. And we just need to keep that in mind when we're looking at these players. And when Tyreek Hill doesn't have, you know, a huge massive game, especially in dynasty formats, right, where we get disappointed and we're like, immediately we just play dynasty on a week-to-week basis. No, don't do that. Don't sell low on this player because you were disappointed that they didn't score 30 points, right? Like, that just doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, no, it really did stick out to me. Even though, yeah, of course, like, that's the way it's going to be. It's like, not like you have a wide receiver one. You're like, oh yeah, 75% of the time, you're just going to bust out there. But man, it was really striking, Tags, to look at it, especially in chart form, and see it. So I'm going to pivot a tiny bit here. Let's talk about a tight end. And you guys may have seen earlier today, I tweeted out something about how everyone's rankings on Hayden Hurst and Robert Woods are too low. We can talk about both of those. But part of that was, Tags, I was reading your boom bust and in between series, and I got there. So let's talk about Hayden Hurst for a second. You look at his numbers, and I'm looking at your chart right now, Tex. It's not about his numbers whatsoever, obviously. He was a tight end one 6.3% of the time. He had a bust rate of 75%. It's looking at Austin Hooper's numbers, right? 7.5 targets per game, a top five tight end in 38.5% of his games. A tight end one in 76.9% of the time, more than Mark Andrews, more than Zach Ertz, more than Darren Waller. Mohamed Sanu is not there anymore, and you've got Hurst taking over for Hooper. Hurst is a better athlete than Hooper, in my opinion. He's being drafted 13th in half PPR. His ECR is up to 9 right now, but I mean, considering what Hooper did, I don't think there's going to be that much of a difference. Maybe a little bit of a target drop, a tiny bit, but not that much. I think when you look at what Hooper did, I think Hurst is probably just in a vacuum better than Austin Hooper. Man, I'm having a hard time keeping my love for Hayden Hurst in check, especially after looking at it from that perspective.
Yeah, no, it's. I'm glad people are starting to catch on to this. Yates and I think Yates and I both have him as a top seven tight end this year, and it stinks because the value is starting to disappear. I'm seeing him start to go in the seventh round, and I'm like, oh man, you're erasing every bit of value that I thought I was going to get with him. Because again, there is some projected, you know, volume in there that we don't know is going to come for, like, certainly, and that's why I'm not willing to draft Hurst as like the number six tight end in like the sixth round or something like that. But he is a fantastic value right now in drafts, especially with that ADP of tight end 13. It makes absolutely zero sense because basically you just want to follow the volume at tight end, and you can actually see that on the charts when you go through it and you see just the targets for the top six guys, and you go through it and you're like, okay, now we get down to this area and it's like, okay, Mike Gesicki probably doesn't belong in that area considering his targets are so high. But you work through this list and you're able to see all these percentages on just what you can rely on from these players, because tight end, as we know, it's extremely volatile. But you know, you can actually see on this chart why you're paying up for someone like Travis Kelce or George Kittle.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I have Hayden Hurst as number seven, and if you guys both do, then I will amend my tweet to make it clear that you guys are not too low on Hayden Hurst, but everybody else.
I have him at five.
Oh, nice.
You know, Yates, your bold tight end rankings just destroys my entire mojo, because I'm always like, hey, guys, what about this?
And you're like, yeah, I'm eight spots higher. Like, oh, all right, well, that's fine. All right, Tags, let's move on to you. What else did you learn doing this entire series?
All right, so I wanted to bring up, and again, this is all based on tiers and how I set up tiers while I'm drafting to understand who players are and what they do for your team. If you draft someone like Tyreek Hill as your wide receiver one, you're going to need some stability throughout the rest of the lineup. And I say that because if you put, and I know Tyreek Hill left a game early last year, and obviously he dealt with an injury at the start of the year, but Amari Cooper was playing through injuries too. And if you put these two side by side last year, you will see Tyreek Hill, 7.4 targets. Amari Cooper, 7.4 targets. Wide receiver one percentage, Tyreek Hill, 33. Amari Cooper, 31. Wide receiver two or better, Tyreek Hill, 41.7%. Amari Cooper, 50%. Wide receiver three numbers, again, within 5 percentage points of each other. So it's almost like they're the same player. And so many people are coming after me and saying, well, Tyreek Hill, his booms are bigger. Amari Cooper actually had more 30-point games in 2019, but Amari Cooper has busted. Basically, his 31.3% bust rate that he had in 2019 was actually one of the better marks of his career, because Amari just isn't a guy that gets consistent targets for whatever reason. So when you draft someone like these guys, you have to understand what it does to the remainder of your roster. Does that mean Amari Cooper shouldn't be rostered as a wide receiver one? Probably not, if you like, by looking and comparing him to Tyreek Hill. But at the same time, you're going to need someone like maybe like a Robert Woods, maybe like DJ Moore, Calvin Ridley. These guys are, as wide receiver twos, are very, very consistent. So you might want to pair it with one of those guys. But it doesn't mean that Amari Cooper is not a wide receiver one. You just have to understand who he is when you're putting him in your lineup. And the same thing with Tyreek Hill. And this is why I basically, when Raybon was on the show, I kind of attacked him for saying that he had Tyreek Hill as his wide receiver two over Julio Jones and Davante Adams, because Julio Jones, over the course of his career, and if you guys have questions, by the way, you're listening to the show and you want to know a career percentage for a player, you want to know about them, let me know. I have these charts going all the way back to 2000. Over the course of Julio Jones's career, he's been a wide receiver one 42.1% of the time. Tyreek Hill's been a wide receiver two or better just 44% of the time. So taking Tyreek Hill over Julio Jones, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
So I just want to put it into perspective, Tex. Where do you have Tyreek Hill ranked? I mean, you're not like, because, you know, it's a lot of kind of bashing sort of the inconsistency, but I mean, is he a top five wide receiver?
Well, this
you?
Comes back to what we talked about, how no, like, there was literally just four wide receivers who had a wide receiver one percentage over 33%. Once you get past Michael Thomas, Davante Adams, and Julio Jones, have at it. Who do you want? Because basically you're just throwing a bunch of stuff into a hat and figuring out which one comes out, because the numbers were so close between the rest of those receivers. That's why those three are in a tier by themselves. And Adams and Thomas should probably have their own tier, but I think Julio is in that can't miss territory, where he's somebody that you just put in your lineup every week. You don't even think about the opponent. It's not to say that you think about it with Tyreek Hill. You play him because you want those boom weeks, but you have to understand those are the only three players that I can say with confidence are going to finish as a wide receiver or two or better in 66% of their games. Those are the only players that I can actually say that about.
And very quickly, Tex, where do you actually have Amari Cooper ranked? Because I don't think I've talked about Amari Cooper with you guys. And my guess is I have him lower.
Yeah, Amari, for me, I have him right now. I'm pulling it up. I have him at number 11. It's mix and match, though. Like, him and Kenny Golladay and Mike Evans are all in the same tier for me. They're exact same tier. And I don't know if one of you guys are going to bring those guys up on this show, but Kenny Golladay and Mike Evans, those guys are not wide receiver ones, like by the definition of wide receiver one and what you want out of them. So I have him at number, I have him at number 11. I have Tyreek Hill at four because, again, you get to DeAndre Hopkins, there's question marks. You get to Chris Godwin, there's question marks about Tom Brady and like the lack of offseason that they've had. Odell Beckham, like Allen Robinson, there's question marks around those guys. So I'll take the upside with Tyreek Hill for sure. But you don't take him over the top three.
Yeah, I, you know, Yates, by the way, I'm sorry. I feel like poor Yates is just like sitting there being like, I'm ready. I'm ready to jump in. I will bring up Evans, though, very quickly, and then I'll turn it over to you, Yates. That also struck out at me. I mean, wide receiver one percentage, I realize it's not a huge difference in the numbers, but it's 30.8%. That is lower than everybody else who's being drafted right around him. And the bigger thing, wide receiver two percentage, only 38.5% of the time. You compare him to the guys around him, Golladay, 56.3%, Chris Godwin, 50%, Julio Jones, 66.7%, Allen Robinson, 62.5%. I mean, that's way lower. Let's briefly talk about Evans. Like, how do you guys feel about Evans coming into the season?
Go ahead, Yates.
With Evans, I said recently on a podcast that like I don't want to draft him as a wide receiver one. I would love to have him as a wide receiver two on my roster where I can handle his big blow up performances, you know, and I can have that. But then I think he's going to miss some more than, you know, he'll be on this wide receiver two fringe for the majority of the season in some games, because the reasoning here is that Tom Brady at this point of his career is not going to stand in the pocket that extra second to be able to deliver the ball downfield. Now, Jameis Winston at his age was, and his cannon of an arm was just going to be able to do that, right? He was going to be able to stand in there as the pressure, as the pocket collapsed, he's going to stand in there. He's going to take that shot downfield to Mike Evans. And Evans is a phenomenal receiver downfield. I don't want to take anything away from him. But what Brady is going to do is as soon as he feels that pocket start to collapse, he's going to look for the player that's open. Right. And so he's going to be looking at, that's what he's done his entire career. That's why Edelman has been so successful as the slot receiver, is because Edelman just creates separation underneath all day long. And so what Brady is going to do is he's going to look at most likely Chris Godwin in those situations. And Tampa Bay's offensive line, it's good. I would call it around like middle of the pack. I don't think it's a top five unit or anything like that. Adding Tristan Wirfs certainly helps, but all this just leads to, I think Evans isn't going to be as involved in the offense as he was last year, but I do still think that he has these big blow-up performances in him. I just know that I'm not going to be able to get him as a wide receiver too, so I'm not going to have any shares of Mike Evans.
Yeah, Evans is a guy who I've had trouble with. I'll be honest. There are a couple players, you guys I'm sure have that, when you're projecting and when you're going through and you're like, oh, I don't really know. And I'll be honest, you know, as I debate where to have him in my rankings as I move him slightly up, slightly down, a little bit like that, man, Tags, this article, that really stuck out. And especially, again, with Brady coming, because I agree with pretty much everything Yates was saying there. So,
yeah, that was one of my biggest takeaways. Like when I was doing the top 10, I was like, Golladay and Mike Evans just looked like they didn't belong. Golladay, a lot of people are going to say that Golladay played, you know, without Stafford for half the year. And that's fair. But if you look at Galladay's numbers, they were very touchdown reliant. He obviously averaged, I think it was over 20 yards per reception. So like those numbers are going to regress a little bit, even if Matthew Stafford comes back to the lineup and he plays pretty well. But Golladay was a wide receiver three or better, just 56.3% of the time. Mike Evans, 53.8% of the time. Like that doesn't belong in anywhere close to the first or second round, in my opinion, because the first or second round are reserved for players that you know you can count on every single week. Those are the rounds that you can't win your fantasy draft, but you can lose it. That's how I treat those rounds. And round three is where I start to take a little bit more chances. But Golladay and Mike Evans, I'm not going to get any of them because, again, those guys are both going at the end of the second round, early third round. And I would rather have Allen Robinson. I would rather get the boom performances out of Amari Cooper. And obviously, I'd rather bet on a bounce back from Odell Beckham because we have a much larger sample size.
Yeah, no, it's hard to really disagree with that. And, you know, we talked about briefly about the difference, you know, with Golladay and Marvin Jones. I mean, Golladay was a wide receiver three or better 56.3% of the time. And I believe Marvin Jones was 46.2% of the time. Not a huge difference necessarily when you're thinking about the two. All right, Yates, enough. Turn it over to you. What do you got? What's your takeaway here?
Yeah, well, I just want to double back really quick because it was funny that Tags mentioned with Tyreek Hill that he, you know, you want to pair Tyreek Hill with like a solid and stable wide receiver. Literally before we jumped on this podcast, I published my article going through my notable wide receivers and my projections. And I wrote down with Tyreek Hill, I wrote down his projections and I said, if you draft Tyreek Hill, target Robert Woods or Calvin Ridley. Because I said that both of those guys are going to be stable and consistent wide receivers. So that was really funny. Amari Cooper, though, it was the guy that I was going to talk about because it was super concerning to see that he busted 31.3% of the time and only hit wide receiver one numbers the same amount, 31.3%. To be drafting Amari Cooper right now where you have to as a top 10 wide receiver, I want no part of. And that's just not how I want to construct my roster. If I'm looking at a guy that I have to spend that significant of draft capital in, that then I can't rely on him week in and week out. Now, in a best ball format, sure, absolutely, sign me up because he's going to give you those huge performances. But if I don't know what I'm going to get out of Amari Cooper, and especially now that you factor in that they added in CeeDee Lamb in the first round, who is going to soak up targets in this offense, that is even more reason for concern. I don't want any part of Amari Cooper.
How much are you guys willing, though, to write off some of, you know, these numbers, given the fact that he was clearly playing through injury, right, in the second half of last year, right?
Yeah.
I mean, are you willing to write any of that off, given these numbers, or do you think they hold regardless? Either one. Go ahead. You don't have to wait.
I mean, so I'm at the point with Cooper now where we're far enough into his career to understand that he might just not be the player that gets the targets that I want him to, because I think if Amari were getting 150 targets a season like DeAndre Hopkins has gotten, I think we'd be talking about Amari Cooper as a first-round receiver. But the thing is you can't dismiss the fact that he's been inconsistent because he doesn't get those high target shares. Adding CeeDee Lamb to the offense isn't going to help matters at all. So I can't say that he gets a higher target share moving forward, but you know, efficiency should be up a little bit. But again, Amari delivers. You have to understand when you draft someone like Amari, you're going to have some up and downs through through the weeks, just as you would with Kenny Galladay. That's why people talking about Amari Cooper as a player that doesn't live up to, you know, his draft position. Kenny Galladay, if you break down the numbers and say this is what he did on a weekly basis, he really doesn't either. But you get to a point where those receivers are gone that do it every single week. But guys like, you know, again, Calvin Ridley was basically already in the wide receiver one conversation based on what he did last year. So if he takes a step forward and Julio Jones takes a slight step back, all of a sudden we're talking about Calvin Ridley as a top 10 wide receiver instead of Kenny Galladay.
Yeah, we talked about Ridley on our last show. I'll be honest, guys, I have Cooper 17th. I'm not getting any shares of him. I have
him around there too.
Yeah, I mean, oh, great. Well, now I can't even be bold. Yeah, you steal my thunder every time. Like, look at me, I'm bold. Look how low you're. Like, it's 18 spots lower than you, Dan. Yeah, no, I get it. I like a lot of the Cowboys offense. You know, Lamb coming on doesn't even really scare me that much, given, again, a rookie wide receiver right now. There's tons of vacated targets with Randall Cobb. But I don't know, man. I mean, I think this is what it is, just a lack of consistency. And I'd much rather sort of take my shot on a lot of these other guys that are going, you know, in the usually an ADP 5 or 6 spots after him. All right, let's turn it back to you, Tags, because I talked about Evans and, you know, you know this better than anyone at this point. What else did you learn as a takeaway from this?
So it's that Robert Woods is like criminally undervalued. The guy scored 2 touchdowns last year. 2 touchdowns. That's it. That's all he scored.
First of all, receiving. Just to, again, make it clear. Those are 2 receiving touchdowns.
He scored 1 rushing touchdown.
You never want to give these rushing touchdowns. I mean, okay. They all count. Okay. A.J. Brown counted.
Hold on. He scored 3 total touchdowns. Is that better?
I feel so much better. I'm vindicated. This is just wipes out all of our previous fights. Go ahead.
I feel like we're arguing about Emmanuel Sanders and you're trying to give me one more touchdown to his name.
You're not wrong.
All right. So Robert Woods is being taken right now as the 26th wide receiver off the board. Okay. He produced as a wide receiver 1 again with only 3 total touchdowns. He was a wide receiver 1 33% of the time, a wide receiver 2 or better 53.3% of the time. His numbers are almost in line with someone like Kenny Galladay's, but you're getting him like legitimately like 4 rounds, like 3-4 rounds later, just depending on the draft. I've gotten Robert Woods as my wide receiver 3 and I'm jumping up and down for joy because he is a wide receiver 2. Sean Corner, one of the most accurate guys in the industry, I want to say Corner has him as his number 11 wide receiver going into the season, so he's clearly high. So the discrepancy between Robert Woods and his ADP, like in terms of like how everybody feels about him, it's kind of crazy. And unlike Cooper Kupp, you don't have to worry about his role this year because Cooper Kupp's role is directly affected if Tyler Higbee's a big part of this offense moving forward, because if they do that whole, you know, 2 tight end set, it doesn't take Robert Woods off the field. It will take Cooper Kupp off the field at times. So I'm not worried about Woods. I have no idea why he's going this far. And again, if you set his percentages up with everybody else, it's kind of crazy that he's going this late in drafts.
Was absolutely one of my takeaways. I have him at wide receiver 13. I've had him there pretty much the entire draft season. yeah, a wide receiver one in a third of his games. We've talked, you know, around there, but there are guys for the most part more like 31%, 30%. Wide receiver one in a third of his games. That's the same as Tyreek Hill, DeAndre Hopkins, and Julio Jones. It's more than Kenny Galladay. It's more than Mike Evans. It's more than Amari Cooper. It's more than Allen Robinson. And again, like you said, two receiving touchdowns, three total touchdowns overall. And I agree. There's all these questions about what the Rams offense is going to look like given how they changed last year. But that's not going to affect Woods. However it looks, it's going to affect Kupp. You know, so Yates, out of curiosity, what do you think? So I'm pretty high on Robert Woods. Are you coming in and being like, I have Robert Woods as my number two wide receiver? Or are you going the opposite direction being like, I have him 85?
I nearly interjected on the over you just to mess with you. I have him at wide receiver 9.
Wow. No, Yates. You know what? I hereby resign as podcast host, at least if Yates is going to be on. Okay, so obviously, Yates, you, and I assume you didn't need, you know, we all learned plenty from this, from Tag's article, but I assume you were all on board before any of this stuff, right?
Yeah. I wrote an article back in June talking about how Robert Woods will be a top 10 wide receiver because you're looking at, again, three total touchdowns all last year, and how you looked at his expected touchdown rate comparative to the rest of the league and what the league averaged. And expected touchdown rate is simply looking at the total yards that all receivers, you know, accumulated last season and dividing it by the number of touchdowns. That means that on average, a wide receiver scored a touchdown every, you know, certain number of yards. Last year, that was 168.13. Every 168 yards on average, a wide receiver scored a touchdown. And so, looking at Robert Woods and his previous statistics too, 5 touchdowns in 2017, 6 in 2018, and then dropped down to 2 receiving touchdowns last season. So if we're looking at, if Robert Woods can maintain the volume and just maintain his role in this offense, which I think is still going to be very pass happy this season, and his touchdown rate just comes up back to average, back to normal, goodness gracious, we've got a top 10 receiver just on his own. But then if he exceeds expectations, my goodness, then we've got a top 5 receiver. So to get him all the way down at wide receiver 26, ADP consensus right now is a wide receiver 24, I think. So he's in this range. Like, I want Robert Woods everywhere.
Yeah, this is one where, again, the ADP just hasn't quite caught up to where the rankings have caught up. Because I remember for a while, I was looking at ECR just when I would see, you know, players who I was far apart on ECR. And I've had Woods pretty steady, sort of bouncing between 12 and 13 pretty much all offseason. And at one point, it was like a good 6, 7, 8 spots higher than consensus. And then I think everybody just started kind of to catch on. And now he's 15 in consensus. But yeah, he's still low in ADP. If you were drafting right now, goodness gracious, you are going to get a steal. And you need to target him because it's hard for me to really envision a scenario absent injury where he's not going to put up at worst really strong wide receiver 2 numbers. So I think we're all in agreement here. I know that's not always fun for everybody, but in the end, we're all right. So yeah. I think it's a good time to agree.
Yeah.
Anything else, Tags, on Woods, or you're good?
Well, no. On wide receivers in general, and I just want to say this because I did it about running backs, and I said about, you know, your RB1 50% of the time, RB2, those numbers 60% of the time. Wide receivers, if you get your wide receiver 1 producing wide receiver 1 numbers 33 or more, you're good. Your wide receiver 2 should be 50% or more of wide receiver 2 performances. So the numbers, like, dramatically come down for wide receivers. There's so much parity, as I mentioned. Finding guys like Robert Woods later in the draft, finding Calvin Ridley going as like the wide receiver 17 or 18 in drafts. Like, if you want to take a later wide receiver, if you miss out on Michael Thomas, Julio Jones, and Davante Adams, basically snag those guys and you're going to be just as good as if you were to take someone like Kenny Galladay.
Tags, out of curiosity, just because you gave that number, does that give you any hesitation with Tyler Lockett, who was a wide receiver 1, 18.8% of the time, and a wide receiver 2, 43.8% of the time, so under 50%. Are you still drafting him as a wide receiver 2?
I'm glad you brought him up, because I literally am researching the Seattle Seahawks right now, and I'm going through basically what happened last year, and the first 9 games were different than the last 7 games, and there's a clear thing that happened. He suffered that shin injury that he had to actually go into the hospital.
Yes.
So, like, it was really worrisome, and after that he became a different player, and I highlight that in the stats. So I think that after a healthy offseason that he's okay. His role is safe with the Seahawks. I'm drafting him as a wide receiver 2 this year. I'm not even worried about it. He's the safe one, whereas DK Metcalf is the one that comes with a higher ceiling. Like, Metcalf has a legit top 6 wide receiver ceiling, but he comes with a little bit more risk because, again, if they sign someone like Antonio Brown, it would directly affect him more than it would Lockett. But, and going back to that whole idea, the percentages and whatnot, Can I just state why I love AJ Green, guys? Because, again, I've been tracking these numbers since 2000. AJ Green, over the course of his career, has been a wide receiver two or better in 59.1% of his games. That, of career numbers, that ranks fifth in all, in the entire time I've been tracking, behind Michael Thomas, Julio Jones, Antonio Brown, and Odell Beckham Jr. That is it. That those are the only players that he's behind. He's ahead of Calvin Johnson. He's ahead of Marvin Harrison, DeAndre Hopkins. AJ Green is a stud, and he did it with Andy Dalton as his quarterback. And now we're going to Joe Burrow, the number one overall pick, the guy that is the most polished quarterback I've seen come into the NFL since Andrew Luck. I am AJ Green, man. I know I give him so much love on the podcast, but seriously,
wait, you like AJ Green?
He should be a guest on our show because I love that guy so much.
Yeah, he said, Tags, here's what I'm going to say. I love your dog, Mitch. He's awesome.
Oh, but no.
If you ever get another pet, he better be some sort of AJ or Green or something like that, because he's essentially part of your family at this point. I like AJ Green too. Sorry, don't yell at me. I like him. I think he's great. All right, Yates, give me a takeaway.
Kyler Murray, guys. Kyler Murray currently going as QB4 mm-hmm. off the board, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm looking this up. The numbers last season are startling. Kyler Murray with a bust percentage of 37.5%. That is significantly higher than any other player that's being drafted in this range right now. In ADP, you're looking at Patrick Mahomes with a 21.4%, Lamar Jackson with a ridiculous 6.7, Dak at 18, Russell Wilson at 18, Deshaun Watson at 26, and then you go from 26 all the way up to Kyler Murray at 37%. Now, we can say last season, okay, he didn't have a DeAndre Hopkins. He had a aging Larry Fitzgerald. He had Christian Kirk, who I think was in and out of the lineup, if memory serves correctly. Then you had guys like Keyshawn Johnson, Damir Bird. So it wasn't exactly like his receiving core was top-notch, right? But for us to be drafting Kyler Murray all the way up at number four this year, and to see that as a startling number for the 37%. Now, I like Kyler Murray this year, don't get me wrong. But that just, like, that shocked me and made me a little bit more nervous about drafting him with that high draft capital this year.
Yeah, it definitely stands out big time. I mean, when you look at those top quarterbacks, 100%, it stands out. We've obviously got a few things changing for Murray, in that the biggest one, of course, being DeAndre Hopkins. But also, just his second year, I mean, Tags, are you willing to write some of that off because he's just a rookie learning sort of how to play in the NFL? I mean, do you expect significant increase this year?
Part of it, yeah. But I also think I think we have to look at the other end too and say that Cliff Kingsbury, his offense had kind of like the surprise attack. You know, like no one knew really what to expect from Cliff Kingsbury's offense. And when you saw Sean McVay take over with Jared Goff, you kind of saw them take off right away. And as time goes on, defenses start to catch on to that stuff. And I think as the year went on a little bit, you saw Kyler Murray start to give away some of that production to someone like Kenyon Drake. And if their defense gets better, they may run the ball a little bit more in 2020. My issue here with Kyler Murray is that this article did force me to change my ranking on him. I had him as the number four quarterback, and I moved him back to number six after this. And the reason I did is because I went through it and I said, you know what? Kyler Murray was a QB1 just 37% of the time. That's not great. Now, again, it is his second year. You do add DeAndre Hopkins. You're projecting a little bit. But all the guys that he's in that tier with, Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, Dak Prescott, they've all finished as top three quarterbacks before. Kyler Murray needs to finish as a top four quarterback in order to justify you drafting him there. So therefore, you don't draft someone at or near their ceiling. The reason that Lamar Jackson was a league winner last year was because he was taken outside the top 15 quarterbacks. You know, going through this article on the quarterbacks especially, I think I was able to capture and say why we as an industry stream quarterbacks. We could talk about it all we want, but this article actually highlights why that happens, because there were just seven quarterbacks, just seven last year, who produced QB1 type numbers in more than half of their games. And one of them just played eight games, so it was a limited sample size. Three of those seven quarterbacks were drafted outside the top 15 quarterbacks. So if you are able to stream a quarterback and guess a QB1 performance 60% of the time, you are essentially drafting someone that's better than the top six quarterbacks that are being drafted without spending that equity.
That really stuck out, Tags, and you wrote that in the article. That really stuck out when I was reading. I was like, wow, you know, some other things sort of, you know, and I get you're going to hear a top 18 quarterback and you're going to be like, well, I don't really. I mean, but that, you know, for the most part, it probably means you've put up a reasonable sort of production. And you have somebody like Gardner Minshew, 71.4% of the time was a top 18 QB last year. That was 12th best among quarterbacks. Jared Goff, top 18%, 62.5% of the time. Like, if you had to roll with those guys for the most part, and especially if you pick the right matchups, I mean, that perfectly serviceable. You know what I'm saying? What I feel like everybody knows at this point to wait on QB. I still have Murray as my QB4, but he's a guy who I'm never going to draft. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, he's my fourth quarterback. But there's no chance I'm going to end up with him on any teams. Out of curiosity, Yates, is he your fourth quarterback, or did you have him like 20th or something?
No, I've had him at four for a while, but I recently moved him down to six.
Okay. All right. So that, I think that's fair. And I think either way, there's almost no chance that Kyler Murray is going to end up on any of our teams. All right, guys, we're getting late in the game here, but we got time for maybe a couple more. So Tags, what's your last takeaway from this series?
I'm going to go with James Conner. As someone that's a value in drafts right now, even if you were to take last year where he left a couple games early, he played with crap quarterbacks, a lot of issues, right? But if you take the last two years from James Conner, you'll see that he was an RB1 43.5% of the time, and he was an RB2 or better 65% of the time. Both of those numbers were better than all of Nick Chubb's numbers from 2019. They were better than Joe Mixon's numbers from 2019. Like, he would be absolutely in that conversation. If you were to guarantee 16 games out of James Conner, he would have been better than those players, and he should be drafted in that tier of players. Obviously, there is some injury risk. We don't know if Roethlisberger is going to come back the same player, if they're going to score as many points, but we do know that that defense is fantastic. They didn't lose anybody of significance this offseason, and they had some young players that are only going to get better. So James Conner is a low-end RB1. Now, you don't have to draft him there, fortunately. He's not going until the fourth round. But again, like, comparing him to those guys that are going at the end of the first round, beginning of the second round, getting a discount on James Conner, even if you want to take him at the end of the third, I'm okay with that.
If you knew right now, Tex, that James Conner is going to be 100% healthy the entire season, and you knew Roethlisberger is going to be 100% healthy during the season, where would you have him ranked? Forget about where you can actually get him with it. Yeah, RB7, right? Yeah, I was thinking 8, but absolutely right up there. And frankly, I'm not even sure you need Roethlisberger, because he was fine last year with the poo-poo platter that they had at quarterback when he was healthy. Like, I'm not even sure if you necessarily need Roethlisberger to be healthy. So where do you have him ranked, out of curiosity? Because I'm fully on board with you here, but where do you actually have him in your rankings?
Yeah, Connor's been someone that's moving up. The more it's like, I know he's healthy. I have him all the way up to RB15 right now.
Okay. I mean, I'm right there. 16 Yates. You agree or what?
Conner, I have him at RB21, but I haven't touched him this whole offseason, right? As far as like changing, I do my initial projections early on in the offseason, and then I'll make slight tweaks here or there as news comes out and all that. With Pittsburgh, I haven't touched their running back room in quite a while. So I need to go back and look at them. But right now, he's at RB21.
He's been one of the guys who's just constantly, I think probably like you, Tags, has just constantly moved up my board. Because when I'm thinking about the guys around, I'm like, well, Todd Gurley, well, you got plenty of questions about Todd Gurley's sort of health. You guys know I've liked David Johnson. I know that, you know, you guys haven't, but eventually, you know, I was just like, no, there's no way. I can't really keep him there. Leonard Fournette is a guy I liked, and actually I had some takeaways from it. I don't think we're going to get to it. We'll save it for another podcast. But yeah, he's just a guy who I'm like, man, so long as the reports are good right now, it's hard for me to not continue to move him up. All right, Yates, let's get to your last takeaway from Tag Series.
Yeah, I'm just going to do this super quick. It was shocking to see that Darren Waller had a 0% bust rate. That is absurd. Yep. Like, and he did this all on the back of, what, 3 receiving touchdowns last season, right? So it's not like he was even, like, contributing heavily in the red zone, you know, or anything like that. He just did it on the back of pure volume. That was just shocking.
Yep. The only tight end that can say that.
Now, does it, how do you feel about him coming into this year? Because I'll be honest, I mean, I think I have him ranked 5th, because I think it's really hard to not have him ranked that high just given what he did last year. But he's another guy. Yeah, I have him 5th still, but he's another guy who I'm not going to end up with him. And Tags, I think you took him in our PPR mock draft that we did
the 6th round
on
yeah.
Monday. But for me, again, it's just with everything that's going on, with Las Vegas, with the addition, you know, especially of Ruggs, I just feel like, I don't know. I mean, I guess there wouldn't necessarily be a reason to go away from it because Waller was so good last year, but they had to kind of like throw it together with scotch tape when Brown sort of got out of there and they didn't, you know, Tyrell Williams. Now they have an offseason to prepare. They have more weapons. I kind of like Hunter Renfrow, to be honest. So he's a guy who I don't think I'm going to end up with in any drafts, despite the fact that bust rate. Are you bullish on him this year generally as sort of even coming close to putting up those type of consistency numbers?
I have him at tight end 6. So the crazy part here is that I can look at him and I can say, okay, well, I expect his targets to come crashing down because of the involvement of Henry Ruggs, of Bryan Edwards most likely stepping in, and he's receiving rave reviews out of camp. He was someone who I loved coming out of South Carolina. And then you have, of course, you know, the mixture of Josh Jacobs, Jalen Richard, and Lynn Bowden out of the backfield. So they revamped this entire receiving core. However, there is regression to the means as far as his receiving touchdowns, right? He has to score on that volume. He has to score more than 3. Just naturally. So I do have him seeing less targets, but more receiving touchdowns this season.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, Tags, one side before I turn it over to you. Travis Kelce, I assume, George Kittle, Mark Andrews, Zach Ertz, and then who's 5 instead of Waller? Is it Janu? Is it Janu?
For me?
It's Hurst. Yeah. It's Hayden Hurst.
I said Hayden Hurst earlier.
Number 6?
Number 5, he has
5.
Well, I quit. Okay, that's fine. I mean, that's fine. My bad on that. My bad. I forgot that you're
Yates. I have Jonnu right behind Darren Waller, though.
That's good enough for me. As long as I got one Jonnu reference in on this podcast, I feel good. We got a Jonnu and an AJ Green reference, so I have done my job. All right, Tex, go ahead real quick on Waller.
Yeah, no, Waller is someone that when I went to start projections, I didn't think I'd like him very much with all the new faces they added there. But the more questions that come up over this offseason, the lack of practice time that they've been able to get with the rookies, Yates just mentioned everybody that's been added to this offense. Waller is the consistent one, right? He's the one that's And if you go back to before last year, Jared Cook was over 100 targets in this offense. So clearly it's a staple in this offense with John Gruden and Greg Olsen. Darren Waller averaged just as many yards per target as George Kittle. He averaged more yards per target than Travis Kelce. And again, as he's mentioned, Darren Waller had 3 touchdowns. Even if we cut back his targets to, say, 100, we take off 17 targets. That's actually quite a bit. He still came at number 5 in my tight end projections. And just to give you an idea of the touchdown regression that he's capable of, Foster Moreau scored 5 touchdowns in the same exact team last year on 25 targets. So, I mean, if Darren Waller even gets 6 targets, it's going to make up for the lack of targets or the targets that he's going to lose in this offense. So I still believe in Waller. I'm not willing to reach for him or anything like that. But if I get him in the 6th round, I'm cool with that.
Man, Tag's knowledge deep dive into Darren Waller does not bode well for you in this game that we're about to play. Yates, I'm just going to warn you on that. All right, so that's going to do it for that segment. I'm not kidding. The series, Boom Bust and everything in between, is awesome. I learned a ton, and Yates, you learned a ton, and we have been doing nothing but fantasy football for like months. So it's really, really awesome. It will help you evaluate players. Go check it out. You can find it at fantasypros.com. Tags, I don't say this often. Excellent job.
Thanks,
excellent
buddy. Job. I appreciate way it. To that's go. One of my favorite way, ones way to do. It really is one of my favorite articles to do all year.
Yeah, it's great. It's great work. Okay. Now we're going to finish up very quickly with a little fun game called Fantasy Odd Man Out. Yates, as you know, Tags wins every game, so don't feel bad if you can't take him down. This is also, as you know, you probably just heard with Waller, pretty much his wheelhouse. So if you take him down, I will personally buy you a Dairy Queen blizzard, which as
I'm
far
sure
as,
that you have like 20 in your freezer.
I have 80 in my freezer right now. I don't think I could sneak one out without my wife getting really mad at me, but I would like throw something and break a window so she looked the other way. 16 questions, Yates. Okay, 4 for each of the main fantasy positions. It's going to go like this. Hey, guys, I'm going to give you 5 choices at quarterback. Daniel Jones, Carson Wentz, Dak Prescott, Dwayne Haskins, Tom Brady. Which quarterback did not play in the NFC East? You get to name Brady, and then we would move on with the 4 remaining ones. If you get the first question right, it's worth 4 points because you've got so many choices. Everyone will go down points. We will explain it as we go. Are you ready to go?
If the questions are that easy, yes.
Your questions will be that easy. Tag's questions will be really hard. There's no stealing or anything like that. You get it wrong, get it wrong. Okay, we've got 16 questions. Yates, it does not matter if you go first or second. It literally has no impact on the game. So just whatever you would like to do, first or second.
Tags can go first.
Okay. So we're going to start with quarterbacks. Tags, your quarterback list. Kyler Murray, I'll repeat it for you, but Kyler Murray, Matt Ryan, Tom Brady, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Philip Rivers. Okay. Remember, all of these are like triple or quadruple negatives because James likes to make my life hard. Which quarterback did not have an interception rate below 3%? So which quarterback had an interception rate above 3%? Is it Kyler Murray, Matt Ryan, Tom Brady, Ryan Fitzpatrick, or Philip Rivers?
Kyler Murray.
Above 3%.
Kyler Murray.
Kyler Murray. Incorrect. That is wrong. It's Rivers. Rivers had.
Oh, it's great. 20 interceptions or something like that?
20 interceptions.
Yeah, man. I thought that was a gimme, dude. I was going to yell at Yates for passing on the first question because that, to me, seems like, yeah, 3.4%. All right, so now Yates, Rivers is eliminated from the choices. I will read the other four choices. And again, this is worth 3 points, okay? Which quarterback did not complete at least 62% of his passes last year? Okay? With me?
Yeah.
Kyler Murray, Matt Ryan, Tom Brady, Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Who Ryan completed? Fitzpatrick.
Ryan Fitzpatrick, incorrect. 62% what? On the nose. Tags, any idea what the answer is?
I would have went with probably Brady.
Brady. I was surprised by that, oddly enough.
Brady was
terrible.
Like his yards per attempt was like 6.6 or something, right?
Yeah, no, it was, but I still thought the completion percentage would have been up there. 60.8% for Brady. All right, you guys are off to a slow start, but at least you're both off to an equally slow start. Okay, let's go to the next one. Which quarterback did not have a sack rate below 8%? In other words, in English, which quarterback had a sack rate above 8%. I get it why James does it this way. I just like to tease him because I know he's listening.
I'm trying to do the math
okay,
here.
So which one had a sack rate above 8%? Is it Kyler Murray, Matt Ryan, or Ryan Fitzpatrick?
Matt Ryan.
Matt Ryan is incorrect.
Oh, no.
7.2%.
Really?
Is it Murray?
It's Murray. Correct. Yep. Murray, 8.1.
That offensive line was atrocious.
Ryan's wasn't good either.
I know, but I want you to both know how embarrassed I am for both of you at this point. Yates, you're going to have two choices on this one. Okay, you got a 50-50 shot, even if you knew nothing about fantasy football. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Which quarterback does not have a touchdown rate above 4.8% since 2017? So who's lower than 4.8% touchdown rate since 2017?
It's got to be Fitzpatrick.
Matt Ryan or Ryan Fitzpatrick? Is that your answer?
Fitzpatrick.
No, you're wrong.
What word?
No, it's Matt Ryan. 2019, 4.2. I don't know. Somebody erased his touchdown rate. I don't know. It's above 4.8%. We checked it out yesterday. Matt Ryan, 4.2 in 2019, 3.8.
Is it because he's been throwing so freaking much?
I don't know. But see, I feel like James designed, and you might want to think about this when you're answering the questions. I feel like James designs these to be like, look at these people. Amazing. So Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Until it's not like that.
Right.
No. All right. I just want to know. Ryan Fitzpatrick, QB1, interception rate below 3%. Completed at least 62% of his attempts, sack rate below 8%, and a touchdown rate above 4.8%. So Ryan Fitzpatrick, QB what, 12 now?
Can we just cut this out of the podcast, this first question, and we can re-record and say that we've got 12 questions?
I understand why you want to do that.
We left quarterbacks out of this for some reason. We're just looking at running back, wide receiver, and
what's
tight end.
What's weird is instead I'm going to cut the rest, and I'm just going to have them loop this over and over again. So it sounds like I've already asked you these. Okay. Well, Yates, this is a four-pointer now because you get the first shot at the running backs, okay? You get the way the game goes. Okay. Your five running back choices, Miles Sanders, David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, Leonard Fournette, and David Montgomery. Okay? I will repeat them. Your first question. Which running back did not have a catch rate above 73%? You want the list again?
Yes, please.
Miles Sanders, David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, Leonard Fournette, David Montgomery, catch rate below 73%.
Leonard Fournette.
Incorrect. Leonard Fournette, 76%, man. That's my dude.
What?
Tags, any guesses?
Montgomery?
David Montgomery is correct, 71.4%.
Oh, this is the worst.
Montgomery's out. Guys, I need someone to get a question right.
I've only gotten them right when Yates has got them wrong. I suck on my
That's
own.
That's true.
Though.
Same here.
I have more
I've
time to
the
think
Rivers
about
one
it,
and I've got the Murray one.
None of them counts. In fact, you're both getting negative points. Okay. You know, I like to do that. Okay. Tags. Nope. Miles Sanders, David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, Leonard Fournette.
Mm-hmm.
Which running back did not have more than 15 carries inside the 20-yard line?
Didn't.
Miles Sanders, David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, Leonard Fournette. Which had fewer than 15 carries.
Le'Veon Bell probably did. David Montgomery definitely did. Leonard Fournette did.
David Montgomery, not a choice anymore. Miles Sanders, David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, Leonard Fournette.
Oh, no. It's either David Johnson or it's Miles Sanders.
Did not have more than 15 carries inside the 20.
I'm going to... Oh, God. I don't want to screw up. I'm going to say Miles Sanders because he wasn't getting goal line carries for like half the year.
You've set the bar so low, it really didn't matter that you, again, got another question wrong. Miles Sanders had 25 carries inside the 20. David Johnson, only 15. And frankly, I probably would have got...
I'm going to say David Johnson because he didn't play.
He didn't play
That's
enough.
That's what I thought.
Right.
It's too obvious. Damn it, James.
Overthinking. Overthinking. All right, guys, literally at this point, flip a coin.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. These are the fantasy analysts from whom you shall be taking advice, audience. Enjoy. Okay. Which running back did not have more than 65 fantasy points after week 10 in a standard league? Okay. So which one had less or fewer than 65 fantasy points in a standard league after week 10? Okay. You ready?
Yeah.
Miles Sanders, Le'Veon Bell, or Leonard Fournette?
It's between Bell and Fournette. Fournette only scored 3 touchdowns last year, and he was heavily targeted. And so I think that's where his value came from. I'm going to go with Fournette.
I'd say Bell for record.
We know what happens, that Tags only gets them right
when it's Yates,
when Yates gets them wrong, and that
this
is correct.
Ridiculous.
Le'Veon.
We suck.
These are legitimately just questions. I mean, as Tags said it, there's no spin. They're just questions. Le'Veon Bell, 63.6 points in standard formats after week 10. Leonard Fournette, 86.8 points, so not even close. Tags, can you get a point?
I
we're at 0-0. This is the
I'm
worst thing
I've
I'm
ever getting
seen.
It, 100%.
Oh, okay. Which running back did not average at least 3 yards after contact per carry last year? Okay?
Yep.
At least 3 yards. Is it Miles Sanders or Leonard Fournette?
Leonard Fournette.
Leonard Fournette is wrong. It's yes. Miles Sanders.
Yes, he got it wrong.
2.1. Leonard Fournette, exactly 3. We didn't get a chance to talk about it, but I'm starting to think we're undervaluing Leonard Fournette.
I don't think so.
Not
in this
fine.
Offense, but
all right, yeah. You guys can say what I mean. It's too bad we don't have enough time, but we'll get to it. But anyway, last year,
this is ridiculous. Okay, we're starting here. Right. We have 8 questions.
Yes, this is the beginning of our 8 questions. This is really remarkable. Actually, I've never
this
seen
is this is actually shocking.
I've never seen anyway. Mm-hmm. Very quickly, Leonard Fournette, catch rate above 73%, more than 15 carries inside the 20. More than 65 fantasy points in a standard league after week 10 and averaged at 3 yards after contact per carry. You guys don't like Leonard Fournette. We are going to save this for a podcast. John, if you're listening, make sure we have Leonard Fournette as a guy we're going to discuss on the next podcast because I don't want to go too long. Let's move on to please somebody getting a question right as we begin this game from the start.
Okay.
Okay. Wide receivers. Are you ready? Yep. This is so embarrassing. Okay. Your wide receiver list, Robert Woods, Cortland Sutton, Stephon Diggs, DJ Chark, and T.Y. Hilton. I will give them again, but are you ready?
Ready.
Which wide receiver did not average 4.6 yards after the catch per reception or better? So an average of at least 4.6 yards after the catch per reception or better. Robert Woods, Cortland Sutton, Stephon Diggs, DJ Chark, T.Y. Hilton.
I want to say T.Y. Hilton.
Do you want to say it or are you saying it?
I think I am saying it.
Okay. He thinks he is saying it. I'm going to take that as a final answer. Yates?
I'm not
Sutton.
Right.
No, you're wrong, obviously. Damn you're it. Guessing at this game, so you're wrong. It's actually DJ Chark, 4.5.
I was going to... Yeah, it was between Sutton and Chark for me.
Hilton was second at second worst at 4.7, so I appreciate the effort. Yates, you want me to just mark you wrong and go on to tag?
No, I'm going to freaking okay, get one. Let's go.
Okay. Which wide receiver did not post a catch rate higher than 60%, okay? Or in English, which one had a catch rate less than 60%, okay? Is it Robert Woods, Cortland Sutton, Stephon Diggs, or T.Y. Hilton? Less than 60%. Oh, my God. This is a correct answer. This is a correct answer.
Yes!
Our first of the entire
We're
one.
Done. I and have it's... my trophy right here.
Already.
We're pulling it in, and we are done. Thank you so much for tuning into the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast.
Thank you for playing our game.
We'll see you next time.
This is a just wonderful performance. He should be very proud of it. That's right.
My Cortland's... 1 point. How many points did I get for that?
That's 3, man. That's 3.
Yes.
Because there were a lot of it. This is going to tag. It's an almost insurmountable lead at this point. tags. Let's see what you can do here. Let's see if you can get out in the win column. Which wide receiver did not see more than 5 targets inside the 20? Okay. More than 5 targets inside the 20. So who saw 5 or fewer? Is it Robert Woods, Stephon Diggs, or T.Y. Hilton?
I'm gonna say Stephon Diggs because I think Diggs scored all of his touchdowns outside the 20.
And suddenly you guys are on absolute fire. That is correct. You just needed somebody to sort of break the dam to get going. Stephon Diggs, 5 targets inside the 20 exactly. So not more. Hilton, 8. Our boy Robert Woods, 9. All right, last question, Yates. Worth only 1 point, but you can expand on your lead. Are you ready? You're feeling good now, aren't you?
Yeah, let's go.
Yep. Okay. Which wide receiver did not average more than 11.5 yards per reception? Is it Robert Woods or T.Y. Hilton? So which one averaged less than 11.5 yards? Robert Woods, T.Y. Hilton?
Hilton.
Hilton is correct. 11.1. Yes. Oh, you guys are on fire now. Tags. Oh boy. If he gets this next one right, worth 4 points here.
Yeah, I think that's the end right.
But obviously, this is funny because we talked about Robert Woods, obviously, coming into this. Averaged at least 4.6 yards after the catch. Catch rate higher than 60%. Saw more than 5 targets inside the 20 and averaged more than 11.5 yards per reception. We could talk about if we're changing our ranking on Robert Woods, but it's legitimately impossible for us to go any higher at this point, considering where we are. So, okay, Yates, this is legitimately the game. I think if you get this right and you get 4 points, Tags is mathematically eliminated. Are you ready?
I don't think that's the case, is it?
You're down 4-2. If he gets more, he's got 8. You've got 2 questions left, which you can score a total of 4 points. 2 + 4 = 6. I am a math genius. Boom. Are you ready?
Let's hope he screws
it
up.
This is why I get the host role. This is why I get the big seat.
Yep.
Okay. This is it. This is it. Yates for the game. Of course, if you miss, Tag is probably going to win this whole thing. So get
ready. Yep, for sure.
The tight end list. Travis Kelce, George Kittle, Zach Ertz, Mark Andrews, Darren Waller. Are you ready?
Oh, my word. The top 5 tight ends from last year?
Yeah. Yes, that's how it is. Which tight end did not have a catch rate above 65.2%? English, which one had a catch rate at 65.2% or less? Is it Travis Kelce, George Kittle, Zach Ertz, Mark Andrews, Darren Waller?
Mark Andrews.
Mark Andrews?
That's right, isn't it?
No, it's not. Oh, the door stays slightly open.
That's who I would have guessed. I would have guessed that.
Andrews was right around
that's
there.
That's a ridiculous guess.
Who is it?
He had a catch rate of 65.3%, not anywhere close to 65.2%. It was Ertz, Zach Ertz, 65.2%. Everybody else well into the 70s. Okay, all right. This is a barn burner of futility. Okay, let's get to the next one. Are you ready? Tags, this is your chance. If you get this right, you're in the lead. Okay. And it goes back to Yates. Tags, which tight end saw fewer than 21% of his team's total targeted air yards? Okay. Which tight end saw fewer than 21% of his team's total targeted air yards? Is it Travis Kelce, George Kittle, Mark Andrews, or Darren Waller?
Oh my. As crazy as it sounds, I think it's going to be Travis Kelce because Mahomes airs that stuff out. I think as odd as it is, I think I'm going to go with Kelce.
Final answer?
Yeah.
Congratulations, Tags. You've lost your first game.
Oh,
ever
you had to set it up
seen.
Like that. Congratulations.
You did. I was done. I gave up right there.
No, George Kittle.
I thought it was Kittle. I was going to say Kittle. Yes. Yeah.
Yes. See, of course, you knew it. 20.2%. Tags, you're mathematically eliminated, but let's finish up here. And Yates, if you want to take a victory lap for this, I will allow it, but it's not something you
I
really
want. I don't
know
if I'm really going
yeah,
to
Yeah, I think you could just sort of raise your hand and leave the room. Okay. Which tight end did not see more than 5 targets inside the 10-yard line? Is it Travis Kelce, Mark Andrews, or Darren Waller?
Darren Waller.
Darren Waller is correct. He saw only 4. So now it's just like a complete shellacking.
That was a given. Come on.
What do you want from me, man? I don't write the question. Okay. Last one, Tags. Let's see if you can get 1 point to at least make this a terrible and not horrible loss. Which tight end did not record more than 3 touchdowns after week 9? Is it Travis Kelce or Mark Andrews? Who did not record 3 touchdowns after week 9?
Travis Kelce.
Travis Kelce is correct. Only 3. Mark Andrews had 5. So Yates, hold on. Before we do, actually, let's highlight Mark Andrews a little bit. Mark Andrews had 5 touchdowns after week 9, 6 targets inside the 10, 28.7% of his team's air yards, and a catch rate of 65.3%. Again, you can't move him up above Kelce or Kittle, but is he locked in as your tight end 3 right now?
Who is that?
Andrews.
Mark Andrews. Can you listen to me when I talk, Yates?
I'm getting my trophy.
You don't deserve to show that gorgeous, perfect trophy.
I have the trophy on my lap right now.
All right. Whatever. Courtesy of Trophy Smack, by the way. Thank you, Trophy Smack, for these awesome things.
Yes.
Even though I'm sorry that we're doing such a disservice to your wonderful product by having somebody show a trophy after this horrible performance. But you did beat Tags, Yates. So
That's the reason why I'm holding this up. It's not because that I was like I shellacked him or anything like that. Just because I beat Tags.
And, you know, it doesn't matter how pretty it is. A win, as I've learned as a Jets fan, if you win, you take that win. And that's all there is to it. All right, boys, this was a lot of fun. Thank you guys, everyone, for listening. Please remember, a week from today, Thursday, August 20th, we're calling it the Fantasy Fest. It is going to be noon to 10 Eastern Standard Time. We're going to do a 10-hour live stream, youtube.com/fantasybros. Go subscribe, click the notification button so you don't miss it. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will talk to you tomorrow. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve slowly in a proof of your love. I don't even know how the chemistry works when your rules are kicking in the dirt, kicking in the sand and stirring up trouble. I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Carol G.
Juan Gabriel.
Christina Aguilera.
What do these three have in common?
You mean apart from impeccable style, chart-topping canciones, and drama?
Facts, yes, all of the above are correct, but most importantly, they're some of the biggest Latin icons in the world. And they're just a few of the game-changing Latin stars we're covering in Becoming an Icon Season 2. Listen to Becoming an Icon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.